Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Corruption and bribery alleged in global football. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says lies, corruption, and bribery have plagued football's governing body, FIFA, for over two decades. Ms. Lynch spoke at a news conference today in New York as federal charges were unveiled against 14 people in a sweeping investigation of FIFA.
Earlier today, Swiss authorities in Zurich arrested seven of the defendants charged in this indictment, including the current president of CONCACAF. We are also in the process of seeking the apprehension of additional defendants. All of these defendants abused the U.S. financial system and violated U.S. law, and we intend to hold them accountable.
Attorney General Lynch called the allegations rampant, systemic, and deep-rooted corruption that profoundly harmed a multitude of victims. She said that since 1991, two generations of organization officials under FIFA used their positions to solicit bribes from sports marketers in exchange for commercial rights to soccer tournaments. Suicide bombings killed at least 17 Iraqi soldiers in Anbar province overnight as pro-government forces in Iraq continue their newly launched campaign to disrupt the Islamic State group in the area. Iraqi military officials said the attacks outside the ISIS-held city of Fallujah late Tuesday came hours after the launch of an offensive to retake parts of the province from militants. Now, the military and the militias are focusing on areas outside of the provincial capital of Ramadi in an attempt to cut the militant supply lines before moving in on the city itself. This is VOA News. A standoff at a guest house in Afghanistan's capital ended early Wednesday, with four Taliban attackers dead, according to an Interior Ministry official. Heavy gunfire and explosions rocked the upscale Wazir Akbar Khan district in Kabul. Afghan security forces clashed with the attackers in the area that is home to several embassies and government buildings. The country's deputy interior minister said there were no civilian or military casualties and that the assailants were armed with automatic rifles and a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack. Britain's Queen Elizabeth has made a formal speech before Parliament to lay out the agenda for the Conservative government, including a promise of an in-or-out popular vote on European Union membership. The Queen appeared before the lawmaking body Wednesday at the state opening of Parliament in full regalia, as is the yearly tradition by the British monarch. She read a speech outlining the goals of Prime Minister David Cameron's Conservative Party. They include a promised referendum on European Union membership. Mr. Cameron has said that he favors EU reform rather than Britain's withdrawal, but will not rule anything out. In her speech, the Queen promised the government will renegotiate British membership in the EU. The EU on Wednesday asked its member states to admit over the next 2 years 40,000 asylum seekers from Syria and Eritrea who've already landed in Italy and Greece. This is Home Affairs Commissioner Dimitri Avramopoulos.
We also have a proposal for an emergency mechanism to relocate 40,000 asylum seekers. Syrians and Eritreans will be relocated from Italy and Greece to other European Union's member states over a period of 2 years.
High-ranking diplomatic envoys from the U.S., South Korea, and Japan met in Seoul Wednesday to discuss how to respond to North Korea's continued efforts to develop its nuclear program. We have this report.
After meeting with South Korean Special Representative Hwang Jun-kook and Japanese Foreign Ministry Envoy Junichi Ihara, U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Sung Kim voiced concerns over the North's recent claims that it successfully tested a submarine-launched missile and built a miniaturized nuclear warhead small enough to be mounted on a missile.
Well, I don't want to comment on intelligence matters, but I think whatever that may have been, it is of great concern to us that North Koreans are continuing to pursue such capabilities. I think the intention is clear. We should be concerned.
Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Joe Palca from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer to serve their interests and to enrich themselves. This Department of Justice is determined to end these practices, to root out corruption, and to bring wrongdoers to justice.
That's U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announcing the indictment against 14 FIFA officials for corruption. Details coming up. Also in the news, Ethiopia's ruling party won Sunday's election with an overwhelming majority. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, football's global governing body FIFA was rocked today by a massive U.S. federal corruption indictment against current and former top officials and Swiss authorities who have announced they will undertake a separate investigation into allegations connected to the awarding of the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. Several FIFA officials have been arrested in Zurich. The U.S. indictment includes 47 counts against 14 people, covering charges of racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering. Prosecutors say it's part of a scheme that involved sports media executives paying or agreeing to pay more than $150 million in exchange for marketing rights to tournaments. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch held a news conference today in New York to announce the results of the investigation.
Now, many of the individuals and organizations we will describe today were entrusted with keeping soccer open and accessible to all. They held important responsibilities at every level, from building soccer fields for children in developing countries to organizing the World Cup. They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer to serve their interests and to enrich themselves. This Department of Justice is determined to end these practices, to root out corruption, and to bring wrongdoers to justice.
That's U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. The Justice Department described it as a 24-year scheme to enrich themselves through the corruption of international soccer. Authorities in Zurich arrested seven FIFA officials today, pending extradition to the United States. U.S. authorities were carrying out more search warrant today in Miami, and the Justice Department said another four individuals have already pleaded guilty in the case. Ethiopia's ruling party won Sunday's election with an overwhelming majority, according to preliminary results released by the country's electoral commission. Martha van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa.
The electoral board says the ruling EPRDF party and its allies have won all the parliamentary seats decided so far, 442 out of 547. The Ethiopian Political Revolutionary Democratic Front won all of the seats in the capital city, Addis Ababa. Opposition parties only won a single parliamentary seat in the 2010 elections. It is not yet clear if they won more seats this time around, says Merga Bakena of the electoral board.
Regarding the remaining results, we have to wait. According to our timetable, we have time to gather, to collect, and then describe it or publish it according to our schedule. But I cannot tell you actually how many the remaining seats will be occupied by opposition or by ruling parties.
Final results are expected on June 22nd. Leaders of the two largest opposition parties, Blue Party and Medrek, could not be immediately reached to comment on the preliminary results. Both have accused the government of harassing and intimidating their supporters before and during the elections. African Union observers judged the elections as calm, peaceful, and credible, but significantly did not use the terms free and fair. The U.S. State Department commended Ethiopia for holding peaceful elections, but also said it is deeply concerned by continued restrictions on civil society, media, opposition parties, and independent voices and views. Ethiopia's National Electoral Board says an equal platform was created for all political parties, and the government has denied accusations of obstructing the opposition in any manner. Merga says opposition parties should accept the reality. Merga says the accusations of the opposition parties are baseless. The new parliament will convene in October, and EPRDF has already said that if the party wins again, Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn will likely be appointed to serve another 5 years in office. The EPRDF has been in power since ousting the regime of former dictator Mengistu Hailemariam in 1991. The preliminary results came out one day before Ethiopia officially celebrates the downfall of the former regime. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The Nigerian military says more than 40 civilians in Nigeria's northeast died Saturday in a raid by Boko Haram militants. An army spokesman says a convoy of 50 fighters led a five-hour assault on Gubayo, a town of about 150,000 people in Borno State. The attack was confirmed by a spokesman for Gubayo's local self-defense force. A resident says more than 400 houses were burned to the ground. News of the attack was delayed because most telecommunications in the region have been destroyed in 6 years of violence. Military authorities also claim they have captured video in Boko Haram camps that reveal foreign fighters within its leadership. The military previously claimed the Nigerian militants had been trained by fighters from Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. As Nigeria's new president Muhammadu Buhari prepares for his inauguration on May 29th, a human rights organization today is calling on him to take immediate steps to address the large-scale violence plaguing the country, endemic corruption, and a lack of accountability for human rights abuses. Human Rights Watch says more than 20,000 civilians have been killed in violence and 1.5 million people displaced since Nigeria returned to civilian rule. Very few of those responsible for the acts of violence and abuse have been held accountable. Mausi Shegun is a spokesperson for Human Rights Watch in Abuja. She said the president needs to quickly turn his promises into action.
The problems are huge for Nigeria, and starting with the security problem in the northeast, the problems of corruption that have largely affected basic rights to health, to education, all of the economic and social rights of Nigerians. These problems are acute. The country is presently in a virtual lockdown where there's almost zero availability of fuel. It's difficult for people to move about. Workers' salaries have not been paid. And so it's a daunting task, but the president would have to move and move very quickly to begin to tackle these issues. How he does that, I want to believe that he and his team, they've met with several partners and interlocutors in the past few weeks since the election results were announced to strategize on how to tackle this problem. For us, what is important is that human rights should be placed at the heart of whatever measures would be implemented to tackle Nigeria's problems.
What is the first step they need to take?
I think almost all of the problems can be narrowed down to two big issues. As you have all mentioned, that's insecurity and corruption. I believe that for Nigerians, what would be important would be to set out very clear strategies for tackling insecurity, the Boko Haram situation, not just incapacitating Boko Haram, but for ensuring accountability for the abuses that have taken place, not just by Boko Haram fighters, but also by security forces. And so dealing with the security problems will mean reform of the Nigerian military itself. And on the part of the corruption problem, I think one of the failings of the previous administration has been the inability to move against and transparently investigate, or at least begin the process of investigating allegations of corruption against public officials and political office holders.
Do you think Nigeria has the means to be able to conduct these investigations that are needed, or do you think outside intervention is also needed in terms of the international community?
I think that the capacity does exist within Nigeria. What we need to see now is the political will to make sure that those capacities and abilities and skills are deployed to deal with these issues. And certainly there is a role in all of this to play for the international community. And I have to say that they have played this role quite well in the past, improving capacities, enhancing the abilities of Nigerians to deal with two major issues of insecurity and corruption. And it would be to continue to support Nigerian efforts to deal with this problem. The international community would have to play that role.
Boko Haram, they continue to abduct women, girls, and even young men from villages, towns, and schools. So how will this issue be addressed in terms of him also address the corruption issue?
The abduction of women, children, boys, and girls is a security problem, and it has to be tackled in that regard. And I believe that one of the most important things that we have documented from our research has been the inability of the Nigerian security forces to prevent these atrocities from happening in the first place. And so I think that what would be important at this point would be the quick deployment of members of the Nigerian security forces to properly secure vulnerable communities in the northeast, including the places that have recently been recovered from Boko Haram. The understanding from media reports is that these communities have been largely left undefended once more. Indeed, Boko Haram has taken one major town in Borno State, which again lends credence to the reports that these newly recovered territories, some of which have seen returns of displaced people believing that Boko Haram had been kicked out, and they had returned in the belief that security forces have taken control, but that has not been the case. Boko Haram was meant fighters were pushed out, but the places were left largely undefended and unprotected, leaving the people vulnerable once more to renewed Boko Haram activities.
Mausi Shegun is spokesperson for Human Rights Watch. She spoke from Abuja with VOA's Kim Lewis. Nigeria produces more oil than any other country in Africa, but it nearly ran out of fuel to power its generators, cars, and airplanes over the past week. How could this happen? VOA's Chris Stein has the answer.
Nigeria practically ground to a halt over the past few days because there's not fuel at the pumps. As the generators that Nigerians rely on for 24-hour power ran dry, businesses began closing down. Telecoms announced cuts in their service. Airlines canceled days of flights. Banks closed early. The crisis was nationwide. In the northern city of Kaduna, Abdullahi Musa said he would rather shut down the cyber cafe that he runs than stand in line for hours for gas that is not there.
To buy a fuel is a problem. To run the business is a problem. To feed your family is a problem. So I don't think there's any reason for you to continue running the business that you're continue losing all the time because of issue of light, because of issue of oil scarcity.
Ishmael Onipilo is a businessman who travels around Nigeria. He says the only way to get fuel is to pay exorbitant prices, if you can get it at all.
In Ibadan, I'm aware that in some fueling stations they sell as high as 350 naira per liter. You know, so the thing is affecting almost everybody.
The price Onipilo mentions is equivalent to about $1.75 per liter, lower than in many countries, but much higher than people in fuel-subsidized Nigeria are used to paying. It's not that there is no oil in Nigeria. The country produces about 2 million barrels per day. But you cannot put crude in a gas tank, and Nigeria's refineries are dilapidated. So the country imports its refined products, and the government pays marketers a subsidy to keep the price stable. Therein lies the problem. The unions and associations involved in importing fuel say the government owes them about $1 billion in unpaid subsidies. They embarked on a strike earlier this month that they only called off this week. It's no coincidence that this is all happening just days before new President Muhammadu Buhari is set to be inaugurated, says Chuba Ezekwesili, a research analyst at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group.
They feel that they're being owed by the current government. And I think the fear is that with the incoming government, there is no guarantee that they're going to be paid what they're being owed.
The shortage highlights the inherent fragility of Africa's largest economy. Nigeria may be home to major Pan-African banks, a vibrant movie and music industry, and of course, a massive oil sector. But without a reliable electric grid, as Ezekwesili said, it will continue to remain vulnerable to shocks like this shortage of petroleum products.
When you have a scarcity of those, businesses can't operate because you can't go day to day without those commodities and without those essentials. And then especially when those essentials, the prices are skyrocketing.
The fuel marketers are not the only ones not getting paid. Civil servants in several of Nigeria's 36 states say they are owed money too. It is another mess for Buhari to sort out when he takes office on Friday. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Twenty-one past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The football's global governing body, FIFA, was rocked today by a massive U.S. federal corruption indictment. And according to preliminary results, Ethiopia's ruling party won Sunday's election with an overwhelming majority and would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The UN Refugee Agency has reduced the estimate of refugees fleeing weeks of violence and chaos in the capital of Burundi. The agency says about 72,000 people have sought asylum in three neighboring countries. That's about 30,000 fewer than previous estimates. The flow of refugees has been lower in recent days as youth militias set up roadblocks around the capital, Bujumbura, and the road to Rwanda. The Red Cross says more than 20 have died in clashes in the capital as demonstrators protest President Pierre Nkurunziza's run for re-election on June 26th. A leading opposition figure was shot and killed last week. More than 450 have been injured. Opposition party members and neighboring governments have urged postponement of the election. The president of Madagascar has dismissed a parliamentary vote to throw him out of office. President Hira Rajaonarimampianina has challenged claims that 121 of 151 members of the National Assembly voted for his impeachment. Supporters of the president say the count is wrong because there were only 102 members present at the time. A constitutional court must determine the outcome of the presidency. The president won election in 2013, the first democratic election in Madagascar since a military coup 7 years ago. Since then, the country has regained international donors support to stabilize the struggling economy of this oil-rich country. However, members of parliament, including some in his own party, say Madagascar's leader failed to end frequent power blackouts and took too long to end last year's plague, which killed more than 70. Critics also charge he has violated religious sensitivities among a large animist society by speaking in Christian churches. A new report finds just under 800 million people around the world are going hungry today. That's 260 million fewer than 25 years ago. The United Nations annual hunger report, The State of Food Insecurity in the World 2015, says chronic undernourishment also has declined in the developing regions. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report is a joint effort by the United Nations' three major food agencies, the Food and Agriculture Organization, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, and the World Food Programme. The report finds 72 out of 129 developing countries will have achieved the Millennium Development Goal of cutting hunger in half by the end of this year. The director of the World Food Programme's Policy and Program Division, Stanley Samkange, applauds this result but says it is too soon to celebrate.
Since the establishment of the Millennium Development Goals, extreme poverty has been reduced by more than half. However, hunger has only been reduced by 14.5%. This provides clear evidence for the fact that growth and rising incomes do not correlate proportionately with improved food security and nutrition. Economic growth is not always inclusive. Rural livelihoods are not always invested in.
The report's hunger map shows why differences among the regions persist. It finds large reductions in hunger in East Asia and very fast progress in Latin America and the Caribbean, Southeast and Central Asia, as well as some parts of Africa. It says sub-Saharan Africa still has the highest prevalence of undernourishment in the world. Stanley Samkange of WFP says chronic hunger on the continent actually is on the rise.
In sub-Saharan Africa, nearly one in four are estimated to remain undernourished. Crisis environments like extreme weather events, natural disasters, political instability, and civil strife have all impeded progress in sub-Saharan Africa, but also in other countries. Globally, one in five of the world's undernourished lives in a crisis environment. Protracted crises have in many countries prevented the protection of vulnerable population groups and the promotion of income opportunities for all.
The report says severe food insecurity is close to being eradicated in North Africa, where the prevalence of undernourishment is now below 5%. Authors of the report say no single solution exists for improving food security, but that certain measures can have a great impact. They say improved agricultural productivity, especially by small and family farmers, leads to less hunger and poverty. And they say economic growth must be inclusive and benefit everyone in society, not just those who already are well off. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.